Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
He is the smartest investor in the room, and that's why we're speaking with Arun Pai, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. How are you, Arun?
Good morning, Michelle. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Let's talk about Warren Buffett. I know you have some personal experience with Berkshire Hathaway, so I thought we'd start off with that. In news, Berkshire Hathaway buying slightly more than a 5% stake in Japan's leading trading companies. These are called the Sogu Sosha General Trading Companies that play a vital role in the Japanese economy, increasingly becoming global players. This is a $6.3 billion play from Berkshire Hathaway, which was announced on Warren Buffett's 90th birthday. Help us understand how these purchases fit in with Buffett's buy and hold investment strategy.
Sure thing. So first and foremost, given the size of the investment, this is definitely, it had the blessing of Buffett and Charlie Munger, as compared to the last investment, which was Barrick Gold, that caused a lot of hoo-ha in the media. But the amount of investment was only like $500 million or something. So that would most probably have been, one of his two right-hand portfolio managers. So coming to these Japanese trading houses, nothing much has changed from the way Buffett evaluates companies. He has four basic criteria. First and foremost, and this is from, like, I think it's 1975 annual shareholder letter, which is available on BerkshireHathaway.com. Fantastic reading for any of your listeners who truly want in-depth insight into how Buffett thinks. And it's kind of funny because you can read the one in 1975, read the one in 2020, and honestly, nothing much has changed.
Wow. But
anyway, so he has four basic criteria, right? Mm. First and foremost, it has to be a business that he understands, which means it has to be within a circle of competence. And a person who's been investing for, I don't know, like 70 odd years, he claims that he still throws away over 90% of evaluations of companies that comes his way. Just to give an idea that, you know, so many people start commenting on every single stock under the sun. When you have Buffett throwing away 90% of the companies because he doesn't understand them, it's something to actually, like, you know, take note of.
Mm.
It has to have favorable long-term prospects. Thirdly, it has to have trustworthy management. And last but not the least, him being a value investor, it should come at a reasonably attractive price. So now trying to like mesh those four, like obviously I have no idea how Buffett thinks specifically, mm-hmm. but trying to mesh those four traits with the current investment hypothesis, business that he understands, sure, you know, on the face of it, these are very large trading houses. You buy low, sell high. You make a certain profit margin out of that. You take the advantage of leverage using your balance sheet, which a lot of these trading houses do, and thereby it becomes like a reasonably profitable business. Favorable long-term prospect. I think this is the biggest key question mark that we'll probably come to later on. Trustworthy management. Honestly, the Japanese hierarchical structure of companies, shadow dealings, cross-investment between subsidiary companies has made this quite a murky exchange or like company or country to put money into. Cheap price, most definitely. Like these are, I think three of them were trading at substantial discounts to price to book, very low price to earnings multiples, and they pay a very high dividend. But coming back to the whole thing of favorable long-term prospects, it's potentially, you know, something that Buffett has seen where maybe the U.S. dollar is not the best place to park money. Maybe it's time to like, you know, given what the Fed is doing, maybe it's time to take like a slightly longer term play on evaluating which company or companies in this case are out there that have a lot of, that are very cash rich, that have reasonably stable business models, and they're very profitable, and hence they're able to churn out a very high dividend. So it seems like the combination of all of these factors led him to, you know, pull the trigger. And just coming back to like in May when he had his shareholder conference, he was talking about like the energy business, of which all of these trading houses have a sizable portion of their income derived from that. His statement about energy businesses, including his pipeline investment, was it's not a very easy way to get real rich, but it is a very good way to stay real rich. And I think that kind of symbolifies, look, I have so much cash in my balance sheet, like over $130 billion. I can park this money in profitable, real return yielding assets. Might as well do so at a time like this when the world is very uncertain.
Especially if, you know, a $6 billion wager can serve as a catalyst that could bring back foreign investors to Japan's value sector heavy stock market, which is something that some analysts are betting on. On a separate note, Stephen Innes thinks that Buffett's recent announcement of buying into Barrick Gold and these Japanese trading companies is a way for Buffett to hedge against a weak US dollar. He said, I think what this rotation is telling us is not that he's so much turning negative on US stocks, but that he may be diversifying away from the US dollar. What do you think?
So in the past, Buffett has taken a couple of very large positions in dollar yen, dollar Korea through long-term FX forwards. So he has a way to monetize his view of US dollar depreciation through the foreign exchange market, which is extremely deep in terms of, like, you know, it can take pretty much any size given the trillions of dollars that get exchanged every day. So there's no restriction on Buffett being able to try to monetize his view specifically on the US dollar through other means. But is this definitely a way of, you know, investing is all about, it's kind of like poker, right? Like you have a certain number of hands and you try and place your chips at hands that you think you have the higher probability of winning. So going by the odds, if this is a way for him to partially monetize his view on the US dollar, partially monetize his view on extremely low interest rate, partially monetize his view on potentially an inflation spike coming up, leading to these agricultural slash energy businesses being able to generate even more returns from what they are currently, maybe it's a combination of all of those facts that I would think as to why Buffett's getting into this play as compared to just solely a US dollar depreciation hedge kind of a play.
Okay, I just want to clarify, Arun used that poker hand as an analogy. We all know that investment is not gambling. We're going to talk now about SGX launching Bitcoin and Ethereum indices with the UK's Crypto Compare. So the Singapore Exchange is collaborating with a British-based cryptocurrency market data provider to provide to launch these new indices, the iEdge Bitcoin Index and the iEdge Ethereum Index. This is going to mark SGX Index Edge's entry into the digital currency asset class. Now, what are these indexes, Arun? How do they work?
A perfect segue to go from gambling to talking about cryptocurrency, I guess. So the way these underlyings are working is for a retail investor to be able to get the underlying exposure into Bitcoin or Ether or other kinds of digital asset currencies. This facilitates that to a very large extent. From SGX's perspective, it's kind of like a no-brainer decision, right? Like the whole MSCI pulling its index suite away from SGX, going to Hong Kong Exchange, was like a kick in the behind. And they had to try to figure out what are the other avenues that we can try and, you know, attract investor interest. And they've obviously expanded their derivatives business line of suite quite extensively. This is the next frontier, you know, the whole digital asset play. From the perspective of an SGX shareholder, I think this is great. From the perspective of, is it good for society as a whole to be able to provide very direct, easy access into underlying digital coin asset classes? I think the jury is still out in that one. Because, you know, my views of digital coins like Bitcoin, Ether, we've talked about this a number of times. And yes, has a lot of money gone behind it? Absolutely. Is there some rationale behind why people are looking at digital coins as a way to park some amount of your assets as compared to, you know, US dollar or euros, which are basically zero interest rate and you have no idea how devalued those things are going to go? Potentially, yes. But in terms of the actual marketplace, where you have a certain number of whales that still, you know, hold, have a lot of control over this market, is that going to lead retail investors to get whipsawed one way or the other? That is my bigger fear. But that being said, you know, a lot of money has been made, a lot of money has been pumped into this asset class. You know, as long as the sun is shining, life is good, I guess, to the investors. So fair enough.
All right. The Singapore Exchange continues to make news with its new partnerships. Another one of them being an agreement that it signed with a Chinese company, GF Securities, that could introduce new renminbi assets to global investors. What does this mean for investors? What can they look forward to?
Now, this is something truly extremely valuable for investors, where you can potentially try and get exposure into a locked market within China, right? Like the whole CNY is not tradable outside the country, and you have to go to like CNH via Hong Kong. For investors based out of Singapore and other global investors who are based in Singapore, this gives a very good exposure or potential exposure, if they would choose to do so, to be able to get access to CNY-denominated instruments. And with the whole bifurcation the world is going through, especially in terms of, you know, the U.S. versus China, obviously, and investors wanting exposure to both asset classes or both countries in their respective currency, especially if a number of Chinese companies are not, are forced to like delist from the U.S., go back to China, or potentially Hong Kong. Now, Hong Kong is relatively easy to get exposure into. Pretty much any discount brokerage gives you access into Hong Kong stocks. But if you truly see some companies onshore in China that you want exposure into, based out of Singapore, hopefully over the next, say, I don't know, a couple of years, we will see SGX trying to make more of these partnerships, more of these dealings, where investors here can get direct access to that.
All right. We're speaking with Arun Pai, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. So we talked about two of SGX's latest moves. There is a third. It's completed its first digital bond issuance for agri-food giant Olam International. What is the significance of this?
This is another phenomenal play by SGX and Olam, and I believe it was HSBC, if I'm not mistaken, who was like spearheading this effort. As much as I hate cryptocurrencies, the underlying technology behind them can be very revolutionary. And there is no space in the financial industry that is more backward than bond trading right now. Mm-hmm. So if a retail investor, like let's compare a U.S. as a mature market vis-a-vis Singapore. In the U.S., as a retail investor, I am able to purchase denominations as low as $1,000 or $2,000 of companies like Microsoft, Google, etc. Now, whether they're actual good investments or not is a separate issue altogether. But as an investor, I have the option to invest a very small amount or relatively small amount of money, I should say, to get exposure into the debt structure of these large names, thereby earning a reasonable interest rate, or at least definitely better than a risk-free interest rate, and thereby, you know, I can try and make some decent returns. You compare that to the Asian market and even the Singapore market, where any retail investor wanting exposure to bonds, you need to have a private banking account. Like the minimum clips are mostly $100,000 to $250,000. So even for a reasonably affluent person who, say, who's worked hard, you know, earned $1 million, $2 million, you're being asked to put like a quarter or one-eighth of your asset into one specific company name's bond. Now, sure, you have many ETFs, et cetera, but, you know, sometimes you just want to have like a basket of three or four names that you're very familiar with and you only want exposure to that. Now, coming back to Olam specifically and SGX and this whole digital bond issuance, I genuinely feel that this will be the first step to truly democratize bond investing. So what's happening right now is there are these things called smart contracts. Again, the underlying technology of Bitcoin and Ether, in this case specifically it's used on the Ether blockchain, they're able to capture the rights and obligations of all the different stakeholders when it comes to like a bond issuance. Could be, you know, the arranger, the depository agent, the custodians, the legal counsels, you name it. So everything can be done digitally in a way that you can very easily track. So in terms, you know, simple things like bond coupon payments, instead of it taking the traditional 5 business days, that's been slashed down to 2 business days because everything is now being done digitally. But just being digitally is not good enough, right? Because it has to be done in a secure manner. And for that purpose, I think this is a phenomenal first step. And I would love to see a lot more progress take place over the next 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, where the market can become a lot more mature. And by the market, I mean the debt market, enabling retail investors to start having access to this asset class and not just it being left to like the rich people who have private banking access.
All right. So a lot of people want to capitalize on what they see as a possible big drop from high-flying electric vehicle maker Tesla. And it looks like there's a fund provider that's rolled out a product. It's called the 3x short Tesla daily exchange traded product, or the Granite Shares 3x long Tesla daily ETP. What are these products? How do they work? And are they meant to capitalize on investors who are bullish or bearish when it comes to risk taking and Tesla?
Greed is one amazing thing, isn't it, Michelle?
Like,
in the financial market, I mean, this is a stock that's now, you know, it was valued or is valued close to $500 billion. Mm. The daily volatility of the stock is unbelievable, right? And then on top of that, you start having these products that come out that are looking to try and basically tap into the greed of the investor mindset to make money even quicker. Or potentially, you know, when you try to make money even quicker, the sad fact is there's always a much higher probability of losing money equally quickly, right? So basically, it's like options, but unlike doing an option exchange, like doing an option where I have the right to buy or sell something, in this case, it's like an ETF where I take my money, say I give $100 to, I invest into this ETF, I buy certain units of it. And the way the fund manager of the ETF works is it takes that capital, it leverages it up internally, thereby leading the price change of the ETF on a daily basis to basically be three times up or down that of the underlying Tesla stock. So let's take a look at an example of yesterday, right? The stock opened at $479. At its low, which was somewhere around close to midnight, it dropped to something like 405, which means 15% drop on an intraday basis. So if someone had hypothetically was long, the 3x long of this ETF, they would have lost 15% times 3, close to 45% of the amount of money they had invested into this underlying over the span from 9:30 a.m. New York time to say like 12:30 p.m. New York time. So in the span of 3 hours. So this is like, it's truly degenerate gambling at its very finest, where, you know, you have underlying, when you have an underlying stock that is going up or down 15% on a daily basis, you really don't need an instrument that provides you inherent leverage for you to be able to make or lose 45% in the span of 3 hours. And this is, you know, it's fantastic for like gamblers who want to try and like double up their money or whatever over a couple of hours. But then you might as well go to a casino and put money on red or black, right? Like there is no sense behind a 3x leverage on something that is so volatile.
Mm-hmm. Again, Arun is not suggesting or implying that you should gamble. He's not encouraging gambling, okay? All right, let's talk about Hong Kong Exchange and Clearing. It's talking big game, HKEX, saying it will surpass NASDAQ when it comes to new biotechnology listings. What does an investor take from these claims?
You know, the Hong Kong Exchange has done a phenomenal job considering the political turmoil this country's been. It's been caught in the middle of the trade war between the U.S. and China. They've come out like relatively unscathed, and not just that, but like have done a fantastic job of, you know, having like rocket boosters for its growth. They've managed, they played into this whole U.S.-China trade war, and they've laid the red carpet out for a number of like the homecoming, right? Where all these Chinese companies, you know, you have no love in the U.S., come back into Hong Kong. We have deep enough financial pockets to let people invest into your secondary or tertiary IPOs. Don't worry about it. Any amount of capital that you want, we have that ready for you. And you could see that in Alibaba, right? Like even in the midst of crazy political turmoil, they were able to raise tens of billions of dollars. Now, what the Hong Kong Exchange is trying to do now is the next step. Obviously, they got the MSCI, which is a big win for them at the expense of SGX. They've been able to convince a number of Chinese domestic companies, forget even the ones that were listed in the U.S., but just the ones that were listed in China, you know, to expand your investor base, make your investor base a little bit more international. Hong Kong is the perfect center for you to do that. You have no legal ramifications, no issues from the government to be able to, you know, list in Hong Kong, because we are one country after all. Come along. And now the next step of them doing this is obviously in the biosphere, right? Where in like vaccines, obviously this is an extremely hot trend right now, given the whole COVID pandemic. They've done a phenomenal job of back even in like, I think it was like beginning of 2018, where Hong Kong Exchange came up with these new regulations where companies, you know, that are especially in this field, where even if you don't have past revenues and hence leave alone earnings, you are allowed to list on the exchange. So does that come with a certain amount of risk? Absolutely. But in terms of, you know, these multi-baggers, like making it go 5x or 10x your money, and you truly believe in this pharmaceutical company or companies, you know, you get, as a retail investor, you get access to this investment asset class. And these companies have done phenomenally well. I believe of the 20 that have gone public over the past couple of years, the annual returns have been over like 30%. And there's still a good like 10 or 15 of them in the pipeline. So, you know, from that perspective, they've really like caught the bulls by its horns, ensured that they are one step ahead of what the investor might want to get exposure into, and has facilitated a way to get these companies to list on the exchange to enable the investors to invest in them. So from that perspective, you know, hats off to them. They've done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and it sounds like it just means better things for the retail investor, more access, really.
Absolutely. I mean, all these big trends, like the amount of money that China is going to be pumping into this industry. If you look at like Made in China 2025, if you look at President Xi's announcements of, you know, we know we have a problem, we have an aging population, we need to ensure the best quality medical care, the best quality vaccines, the best quality medicine is being produced in-house within the country, because we now have that capability. You know, gone are the days of like 15, 20 years ago where China was just like the manufacturing bowl of the world. All the IP came from the US or Europe, and a very low cost manufacturing used to take place in China. Now, if you compare that to look at TikTok, right, where the US is afraid of the quality of the algorithm that TikTok has created, people are afraid, you know, like it's really that good. So now you have this kind of IP being created in China. Let's try and do it. Let's try and utilize it for the good of our local population. By that, I do not mean TikTok. By that, I definitely mean more on the medicinal, you know, vaccinational aspect. Mm-hmm. And let's ensure that there's a very solid capital market that can fund this kind of potential growth. So from both aspects, this is a win-win for the Hong Kong Exchange.
Oh, I love to end on a win-win note. Arun, thank you so much for joining us this morning and helping us understand what markets are talking about.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Arun Pai, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. This has been Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.